Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, and welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. You know, what happens when two guys get together in college, start a catering company, and realize that there's space at the bar that needs improvement aesthetically, functionally? Well, W&P Design is here to answer all those questions. Eric Prum and Josh Williams. Now, it's fascinating that your story kind of begins at UVA in Virginia, stuffing mason jars of peaches and bourbon. So tell me what your dorm room or house or wherever you live looked like.
Well, I think it started the first day of school in our freshman first year dorms. Josh walked through the door with literally a stack of cookbooks.
Not much else.
Yeah, I was curious. And, you know, I think, what was it, your third year of school?
Yeah. So so we lived together all 4 years of college after that. So somehow we made it through the stacks of cookbooks surrounding us in our college dorm room. And then my third year of college, I went off and did, culinary school in Italy. And that just opened my eyes to the world of food. I'd worked in restaurants and always loved cooking. But that really kind of accelerated things.
So at that point, Josh came back from culinary school. My level of cooking expertise at that point was I was a sandwich artist at Subway restaurant.
Oh, it's an actual term.
Yeah. They're artists.
Yeah.
Very talented.
And Josh proposed that we start a catering company. I was from Charlottesville, where we were in school. And so we kind of had a few connections to businesses, people getting married, things of that nature. And it kind of took off.
Yeah, we were doing it out of our apartment in Charlottesville. We had a one-bedroom apartment with a pretty massive kitchen, fortunately enough, and just filled it with refrigerators and kitchen equipment and ran a catering company for
a
year.
What came first? Was it these mason jars with bourbon and peaches or the catering company?
So it started with the catering company. So we really started off with that. And over the course of events that we were throwing, we would obviously do the food, and then we'd also do cocktails and things to pair with the food. And one of the more popular things that we did was peach-infused bourbon. And so we'd have, you know, every summer we'd make a pretty large batch of it. Virginia's great for produce, and at the end of the summer, there's usually a lot left over. So we would go over, pick up a bushel of peaches, and make a huge batch of bourbon that would last us most of the year, and that was all in mason jars.
See, Eric, I know you were a sandwich artist, but what was your fascination with not just food, but the design of food? Because I know you went to school for more specific things.
So I really dove into the kitchen side of things. I think I really enjoyed cooking with Josh and just diving into all of this. And my professional background ended up being in product design and development. As we were doing all of this, Josh and I, at that time, as we were running the catering company, we had decided, we wanted to get into some business of some kind, and we were going to probably go out and work professionally for a couple of years and come back and either start a restaurant or something. I think the original goal was to start like a paninery.
Like a panini restaurant. Was really aiming high on that one.
Yeah, but I'm glad you haven't franchised the paninery.
Yeah. But we got to New York and we were both working and trying to like save up the pennies. And essentially during that time, we were thinking about what we had been doing and I think it was Josh had the original idea to create a mason jar cocktail shaker, and beyond just that, to create a line of products in the beverage space that were similarly designed, same aesthetic, same sort of feel. And so I one night we literally came up with the original concept and actual functional design for the mason jar cocktail shaker. But we really knew what we wanted to do was not to be the mason shaker. We identified that this was going to be a really fun, awesome product, but what we really wanted to do was to design and make products in the food and beverage space so that we could be involved in the industry that we loved, but we could also be creating interesting products in the space.
So what was the need for the mason shaker? It's an interesting space to say, well, you know, the bar industry, the home bar or maybe even restaurant, doesn't have this and it needs it. So often a designer's solving a problem. What mm-hmm. seemed to be the problem at that time?
I think it was a combination of factors. I think cocktail at that time had the cocktail world was a bit mysterious to most people. It was very high end. You know, this was, call it 5 years ago. You know, mixology was just starting to be a term that people were using. And cocktails in general were things that you enjoyed in a high-end bar with a guy with a mustache and an apron making you an old-fashioned and, like, very fancy cocktail. And that's where you enjoyed them. And what we felt was a disconnect between that and how we had always made cocktails, which was using simple, fresh ingredients at home in a very accessible and fun way. And using what's around you to make a cocktail, which is really just fresh ingredients combined with spirits. And what we felt the mason shaker would do is not only, you know, combine, sort of repurpose an existing icon of Americana and create like this really fun product, but it was also something that was immediately accessible to, home users. So people could look at it and it's not a crazy cocktail contraption. It's a mason jar with a cocktail shaker attachment for it.
And you can see the ingredients as you're putting them in. You can see the everything that goes in there. It's got the measurements right on the side. It's very user friendly, easy to understand.
So it's a very friendly thing to have in your home and to use and to actually use to make cocktails at home, which is how we wanted people to use it.
Accessible, American. Mm-hmm. Or Americana, but Southern. I know you guys are split yeah. within the state. Did it represent something of your childhood, your youth?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a household, I think Josh did as well, in which mm-hmm. there are mason jars everywhere. The classic thing, and we use it for at home, was for dressings and things of that nature. But, I mean, I grew up with mason jars being used for this, that, and whatever, everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a super functional piece that appears in basically every Southern household.
Yeah, because I look at the mason shaker, and obviously you didn't invent the ball jar.
Right.
But what you did is repackage something, repurpose something, and make people understand how to interact with that. And, you know, coming from a design and product manufacturing background, how important is it to have that conversation before you just launch a product line?
Yeah, I mean, at our company today, we're still doing the same thing that we were doing 5 years ago. We sort of look at a category that we're interested in, that we maybe want to fix, and we all kind of come together and we talk about our personal experience with that product or the category that we're looking at, and we try and think about whether we can actually make something better and if there's a purpose and a reason for it. Otherwise, there's not really much of a reason to do it.
Yeah. Have there been discussions where like, oh, we can't improve that. We're not going to touch it.
All the time. Yeah. I mean, daily.
But are you constantly critiquing just, you know, the most banal, ordinary, everyday things?
Oh, yeah. I think that the question that we're asking every day is sort of why. Why are certain things designed in this way? Why is this difficult? Why is this annoying? Like, why is this process harder than it should be? Why doesn't this exist? So that's a constant sort of dialogue, both with us, but then I think the most exciting thing is the team and community that we've built at our company. Over the last 5 years, we've brought together a group of really just talented and interested and curious people that are constantly asking those same questions, which is really exciting.
Why wasn't the Mason Shaker enough? You published an amazing book, Shake, and then Infuse, which activated that product. But, you know, you can easily put the Mason Shaker on a shelf and it would sell. It's proved that. But what was so important about creating a guide for the product?
I think it goes back to sort of what we were seeing happening in the cocktail world. We had always made cocktails in a certain way and thought about drinks in a certain way. And I think it's kind of a chef-driven way of looking at ingredients and keeping things simple. And we didn't see anybody telling that story to people that cocktails could be simple and fun and something that you could make at home.
It sort of was very true to our own experience where Josh was very much the driver behind, you know, the culinary side of our company. And as we were launching all this, I was learning as we went. And, you know, I learned to make cocktails in a fun, social, and simple way. And it was something that we thought others, especially at the time, there was just nothing exactly out there. There was a lot of noise in cocktail, and there's a lot of merit to those books and that process. But it can be really intimidating to people. And we kind of wanted to create something that allowed people to replicate that in the home. And one of the most fun things since the launch of Shake has been, one, the longevity of it. It's a book that just continues to be engaged, and people, you know, post and repost cocktails that they're creating and ask us questions all of the time. It's just been one of those things that's been fun to see over the past couple of years.
You know, looking at a couple of your other product lines, carry-on cocktail kits, there's the Moscow Mule, Old Fashioned, Gin and Tonic, Bloody Mary, and more. They're classics, and you're not trying to reinvent the classics, but you're trying to reinvent the way those classics are delivered or the space in which you enjoy them. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about, you know, being 30,000 miles up in the sky and being able to, you know, have these things that weren't available, you know, in air flight.
It comes back to that question that we were asking, like, why are my only options on a plane, you know, a Jack and Coke or, you know, a whiskey on the rocks? And we had always kind of like hacked together cocktails on a plane. So like my favorite is like the red wine and Coke, the classic like Spanish cocktail. And, you know, we asked the question, you know, why can't you get a good cocktail on a plane? And that drove us to really think through, you know, how do you solve that problem? And, you know, that process of designing the carry-on cocktail kit was more of like a user experience design process, because you think through what somebody's experience is on a plane and like what each step of the way when they're sitting down and opening up this kit, what are they doing and what are they thinking and what do they have at their fingertips to make a good cocktail on a plane? And that's kind of how the carry-on kit was born.
I hate to think of it as a lowest common denominator, but you know, you have to expect everyone to be able to use this thing, even if they're a novice. And right. You know, Eric, you saying that you kind of learned on the job, did these feel like fail-safe or you know, large latitude cocktails that people couldn't screw up? Or is it the way that you made the product, packaged the product, that made it inelastic?
Yeah, I think the product itself is relatively easy to understand. The design team and Josh behind all of this have made it in a way that not only are the components that go into it very functional and straightforward, but the syrups, the sugars, the bitters, all of these things that we develop actually take quite a bit of time to develop, and we're developing them with actually some really great craft purveyors here in Brooklyn, in Washington, and Connecticut. And the idea is that if we can get everything into a single bottle and or packet or something like that that is very straightforward and easy to understand, then it's going to be very easy to create those cocktails.
And they're TSA and FAA compliant.
Yeah.
Most importantly,
that was very important. It was. It has been those carry-on kits have been a design, production, whatever challenge that our team's really risen up to. And with each carry-on kit that we launch, it's another challenge. I mean, the Bloody Mary kit has mini cornichons that are pickled and packed in-house, you know, and we've got, you know, the hot toddy kit. It was, you know, our production manager spent weeks trying to figure out how to seal and pack and label the cinnamon sticks that are wonderful and in that the hot toddy kit. So with everything comes another level of thought and engagement.
With WNP design, we get to drink better in the sky.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and we'll hear more about the wonderful product designs of WNP.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cooking machine. But what better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Hey, and welcome back to the Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. Today with WNP Design, Josh and Eric, we were talking about a couple of their barware products. And there's so much more. I mean, you guys make bartender's knives, peak ice molds. Mm-hmm. But what's next?
Yeah, I mean, at WNP, I guess, for us, again, we're always sort of asking the question of, you know, how we can do better with something in, say, the food and beverage space overall. At Peak Iceworks, I think, was kind of the it is what's next this year. What we did about a year and a half ago is we sat down as a team and we looked at ice molds in general and ice trays in general, and we had all kinds of issues with them because they spilled, they didn't stack, it was hard to get the ice out, and we had a unique problem of creating all of these, you know, cocktail books and recipe books where ice was required, and we had a very small freezer, so we were using all these ice molds and trays, and we sat down as a group and we said, hey, like, how can we fix this? And as a result, that line we're now adding to kind of cover all of the major ice figurals or shapes, whatever you want to say.
You can say figurals. I'm going to try to incorporate that in the show more.
Yeah, right. The Collins ice tray, crushed ice tray, large and small ice. We've got, you know, spears that are launching that go into like water bottles. And that has been a really big product line for us because it's actually much better than the incumbent ice trays that are out there. And we're slowly replacing them at Sur La Table, Crate and Barrel, Bloomingdale's, you know, we're approaching Whole Foods. And so that's been a joy for us to see as a company, because we approached an entire category that we thought we could fix, and we created products that are very mainstream and better than what's on the market. And they've slowly increased to probably our second, our second best-selling thing. And that's been a real joy to continue to innovate and design around.
But do you ever get to the point where you're like, who really needs another wine key? And then the host key happens in conjunction with your book host. Mm-hmm. And that's where the circle, you know, exists. The cycle is closed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for things like that, there's sort of sparks of inspiration that come to, you know, members of our team at our company. And what we're doing is trying to foster sort of a culture within our company of creativity and the space for people to come up with new ideas and new designs. And if, you know, somebody on the team comes up with a great design for a new bottle opener, there's room for that. And that's been a really fun and engaging thing for us to have that level of creativity in our company.
There are 200 plus original products that have come out of WNP design, but only one pineapple. Talk to me about the functionality of that. I know it's an aesthetic thing, but what problem were you trying to solve?
Well, for that one, I think that a problem, solving a problem wasn't as much of a driver as much as this incredible demand that came up. I think, Josh, were you coming back from Miami at one point?
We had a vintage brass pineapple that was originally a candle holder. I think it was from the 70s that I bought off of eBay. And we were shooting a cocktail recipe out in Montauk, I think, at the time. And we used it on a social media post, and it was, you know, definitely not food safe. And we just used it for the aesthetics of it because we thought it was cool. And you know, the response on social and on Instagram to that one post was insane. And everybody was asking, you know, hey, that's amazing. You know, where can I buy this? And we looked around, and these pineapples hadn't been really made since the 70s, when they were, you know, a symbol of hospitality, and they were a classic sort of host and hostess gift, that kind of had fallen off the map. And so the problem really that we were solving there is that we couldn't buy them anywhere. I mean, you could buy vintage ones for, you know, $100 off of eBay, but you couldn't actually find one that was being made today. So we made them. And I think that's kind of grown from there to now a full line of pineapple related drinkware.
Yeah. So it evolved into a line of shot glasses, tumblers, large format drinking tumblers. And then, you know, another problem did pop up, and that was that a lot of the consumers and customers were trying to turn these tumblers into cocktail shakers and asking us, you know, why can't I shake my cocktail in this? And that led to the sort of premium product that we've designed, which is actually a pineapple cocktail shaker, which launched late last year. And that's been a fun product that was the result of people maybe having mishaps with a pineapple cup.
You know, but I love that engagement that you have with your community through social media or just through listening to your consumers. But you do the same thing by supporting a community of amazing craftspeople. I mean, let's talk about your cocktail kit specifically. Mm-hmm. Who makes your tonic? Who makes your, you know, syrups? It's not just all within the WMP umbrella.
It's been amazing. We found both in New York and all over the country, there are a wonderful amount of people that really care about their craft and their product, whether it's Jack Rudy's tonic and elderflower down in South Carolina, or Morris Kitchen here in New York. Kari's amazing and has helped us out with, you know, ginger syrup formulation. And we've got, you know, Hella Bitters, who's helped us, you know, create a bitters for the carry-on kit, or even, was it Dimitri? We've got, you know, a Bloody Mary mix guy in Washington. And we just started by reaching out and asking them if they, you know, wanted to help us, were willing to work with us. And we found that there's just an incredible community of makers. You know, we've got a line of mixers with Boylan Bottling, the, you know, Boylan Heritage Club Ginger and Tonic.
You can't forget Slap Your Mama Seasoning.
Oh, yeah, down in
Louisiana.
You never forget Slap Your Mama.
Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah. And you know, our head of marketing, I think, linked us up with them. And, you know, the rimming salt for our Bloody Mary mix is made by them. You know, Bob McClure at McClure's Pickles kind of showed us how to pickle things. And so we've got many bags of Cornichon in our Bloody Mary carry-on kit. So everything's kind of an adventure if you dive in deep enough. And we've found nothing but friendly people on the backside of all of those conversations.
You know, I was reading a past interview of yours, and you kind of quoted Apple as an inspiration, a company that you kind of look up towards because they change user experience. You know, what I've always found interesting about Apple is about the monopoly they have in user experience, that they don't let those other people come in and participate. Yet you're reaching out to, you know, this greater community, again, of craftspeople to be part of WNP design in some matter. So in a sense, maybe you guys have eclipsed the mode of what Apple tried to build, or realize that it's about a greater community than just yourselves.
Yeah, I think that there is a really strong community in this sort of food-related startup scene in Brooklyn especially. I think everybody kind of runs in the same circles, and we're super lucky to be a part of it. It's a really special community.
It's allowed for some really fun. One of the biggest components that we try and stick to is you know, company outings and field trips, where we'll take everybody to a distillery or a brewery or a cheese cave. And again, that's kind of one of the most fun parts of what we're doing. Everybody's kind of like learning together and engaging in the food community that is so vibrant in New York.
And I mean, you do the same thing with your books now, having Dovetail Press and Nick Fulshall there publishing with you. You're picking a specific genre and exploring that as thoroughly and beautifully aesthetic as possible. What is this latest run? It's Matcha, the yoga manual. I did like air parentheses there.
You couldn't see that.
No,
I saw it.
See that. And then Work Life. But prior to that, there was Host, Buenos Nachos,
Brew.
And all these books were associated with a product in some way. So they were totally engaging and encompassing.
Yeah. So the mission at Dovetail Press, we partnered with Nick just over a year ago. And the whole idea and mission was that at WMP, we'd created this vehicle that could create really great products and then from time to time, really great content in books. But we really enjoyed the bookmaking process, and obviously Nick had a ton of experience there and had a great interest in creating products as well. And we felt like at Dovetail, we could create a publishing company where the core mission was to create genuinely great standalone content and books alongside genuinely great products that could also stand alone but complemented one another when retailed or made available together. So it would be a great, you know, bean to brew coffee book with a product that allows you to, you know, create French press cold brew and pour over coffee. Both of those, the product and the book, could sell separately, but when they're sold together, someone can get this great manual and also use it with the product that's sold next to it.
I mean, and the nacho baking hat is one of the greatest things ever.
Too bad it's always sold out. No, it's been a really fun one, and it's definitely resonated more than I had anticipated.
Yeah. So, I mean, you looked at Mexican textiles and tried to figure out what would be perfect for that. So what comes first, the product or the book these days?
Generally, it starts with the book, and it really starts with a category that we're just interested in and think is maybe underserved in terms of content that's out there or served incorrectly. So with, say, the book Brew that came out this fall, you know, that was a category that had books, you know, related to coffee. You know, there are coffee books out there. But what was missing in our mind was a book that could demystify craft coffee and break it down for somebody who, you know, was interested in it, but really wasn't an expert. And it started with that as the mission. And then we applied that same mission to a product. So we wanted to create a product that was very easy to use, very accessible, and kind of demystified the process of making coffee at home.
I hope you guys have demystifiers on your
business
card. Yeah. Or you can create, I'm thinking of it like a humidifier.
That could be a product.
A demystifier.
Oh, man. Writing that one down.
Sorry for making more work for everyone that works at WNP Design. But I love the greater gamut of everything that you guys do because there's such a sensibility of where it exists in the world. And I know you have like three tenets of which you work on. The last one being something that you have to feel passionately about, otherwise you're not going to pursue it. So what are your new passions right now past your, you know, latest catalog that you're trying to pursue because you feel strongly that it should happen?
Sustainability?
Personal sustainability.
No, we've actually been looking into recycled and recyclable materials as we could apply them to our retail network. So now we've got this great list of customers, right? We've got great the Williams Sonomas and the Sirla Tobs of the world. And we are looking at all kinds of recycled and recyclable materials and applying them to maybe tableware, to grocer totes and market totes. And we're passionately pursuing what might be a line of products in that world. And, you know, there's not really an answer yet. You know, as the WMP folks know, there's samples of recycled plates and, you know, bags and things of that nature all over the office. But it's something that we're really getting into.
I think we're looking closely at sort of the groundswell of healthy and health-focused products of how people are, you know, changing the way they consume food and beverages currently. And I think it's happening at a rapid pace of people recognizing that things that they put in their body, you know, have an effect on their well-being and their health. And, you know, the functional nature of ingredients is something that we're paying a lot of attention to right now. Because I think it's having a real change right now in the way people are consuming, you know, whether it's beverages or food at a restaurant or how you're cooking at home. Things are changing in the way that people are consuming food.
So you're not just Epicureans, you truly are utilitarians. Which, you know, regardless of what you want to define yourselves at, I think W&P Design is really just the new symbol of hospitality. So thank you for, you know, making 200 plus products and continuing to strive to improve all the products that we have out.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for having us.
And you can check out more at W&P Design and spell out and.com. Of course, thank you, Josh and Eric. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Big thank you to Mo Fad, Music by Cookies, and David Tadashore Engineering. Just one quick announcement. Our Book and Brews kickoff is next week. If you're not a member, you should become one because this is a members-only event, of course. But on April 12th, we'll be at Three's Outpost at Franklin and Kent with Kathy Irway, host of Eat Your Words, and her book, The Food of Taiwan. So there's going to be plenty of books, brews, and brouhaha. Thanks again. Hope to have you back here next week at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.